Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 150, recorded Monday, April 22nd, 2019. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. There's just one topic on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast, Travel Interrupt Us. So coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, as the weather begins to just sort of stagger unsteadily towards spring. It was 74 degrees last Monday, and then 5.3 inches of snow, thunder snow actually, on Sunday, and back up to the 70s 2 days later. Here you go, April 14th, over 5 inches of snow, over 1,000 flights canceled. A very nasty surprise for folks who thought it would be safe to connect through O'Hare. But I tell you, it just validates a Chicago truism, which is don't put the snow gear away until tax day. Welcome to the Midwest. So I've done a chunk of travel. That's a unit of measure for you, a chunk of travel since the last episode. A two-day trip that hit four airports in the first day, Chicago Midway, Las Vegas, Houston Hobby, and Nashville. And then the second week, I squoze a trip to a new airport, State College, Pennsylvania. That's where Penn State is, in Happy Valley. But squoze that in before heading out on vacation to Brittany, France. Now, that squeeze wasn't too tight. I flew back from State College on Wednesday night and then left for vacation Thursday night. But I did scout out a couple of backups in case the United Express regional jet went AWOL. There was a hour or so drive down to Harrisburg, a couple-hour drive over to Pittsburgh. Luckily, I did not need any of them. United Express was having a good day that Wednesday, and therefore so did I. The next day's flight to Paris on SAS by way of Stockholm went fine. Also, we got in on time, into Stockholm on time, found the left luggage lockers, try to say that one three times fast, and then the express train into the city, all really without much of a hassle. Arlanda Airport is really comfortably sized and has really good signage. I mean, the only real problem was that we got into Center City, Stockholm, too early, like around 8:30 a.m., and nothing was really open. So we coffeed up at one place and then had some cardamom pastries at another. I guess that is a Swedish thing. And then sort of generally puttered around until things started opening up an hour or so later. It was sunny, if brisk. So walking around the Gammelstein and then Södermalm was really nice. Now, I always chuckle a bit when going through Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. Passing through, it's just like it's this tangle of flat escalator walkway tubes that, I don't know, seem to be going sort of hither, nither, and yon, that sort of bridge the levels and then through the open center of Terminal 1. The walkways are a bit awkward with wheeled luggage because there's not steps. It's more just the flat walkway. So you're going down and then up. An airport porter in front of us let a wheelchair go free on the downhill span. Took a moment for it to register with me that it was an empty wheelchair, and then let it roll back to him on the uphill. I mean, no knock against him. It was the end of the day. The next day, we caught a high-speed train out to Brittany to Saint-Malo. We walked just out of the train station, right across the street to Europcar for what has to be one of the easiest rental car pickups I've ever had in Europe. No scare tactic insurance upselling, just a look at my driver's license, a quick pointer to where I could find the car in the train station parking lot. 5 minutes max, that was it. And then dropping off the car a week later at Ren train station, absolutely the easiest rental drop-off. Gave the guy the keys and a receipt showing that I'd filled up the car, and I was done. No waiting for him to go inspect the car, just a handshake and have a nice day, or whatever the French say. Now, the next day wasn't quite as carefree, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So following up, I've been not quite hating on, but certainly have been down on regional jets for some time in this podcast. I mean, given a choice, I recommend people avoid them, not because of their size, but because of their schedule dependability, because the regional airlines model is to bounce a plane from place to place, kind of bunny hop it rather than route it through hubs. And so they just never have that opportunity to recover from a weather or a mechanical delay. And those delays then just cascade down through the rest of the day. Now, there often are not alternatives to regional jet, hence my earlier comment about needing backup plans for my regional jet flight home from State College. The flight was at the end of the day, the most vulnerable time to delays. And given my personal experience, I wasn't surprised to read that the U.S. Department of Transportation data showed that regional flights were 2 to 4 times more likely to be canceled than mainline flights. The Chicago Tribune dug into the DOT data and found flights operated by Delta's regional partners were about 4 times more likely to be canceled than flights operated by Delta, while American Eagle and United Express were a little bit better, about 2 to 3 times more likely to cancel than their mainline partners. Now, you can't avoid regional jets when going into places like State College or Charlottesville, Virginia, or Appleton, Wisconsin, but you can when flying into LaGuardia or Dallas or New Orleans. And in those cases, unless those RJ flights have exactly the schedule I need, I'll suffer a bit of inconvenience for a lot more dependability. Hey, on our travels through Brittany a few weeks back, I found that we were getting a large number of card decline messages when trying to use our Chase Sapphire card at gas stations, stores, and in Paris when I tried to use my Uber app. Now, this isn't a new card. We've had it for over 5 years, and it's not the first time that we've used it on travels in Europe, but it just feels like that Chase fraud algorithm is more sensitive, giving out more false positives, and there's really no way to sort of update the information or let them know, hey, we're here. On the way out of Brest in Brittany, I pulled into a Total gas station to fill up on our way down to the Crozon Peninsula. We'd be there for a couple of days of hiking, and I wasn't sure how many gas stations we'd see. Turns out that I didn't need to worry. But so I pull up to the pump, tap the Chase Visa, get a decline. Insert the card into the reader, get another decline. I do the same drill with my Citi MasterCard with the same result. However, I immediately get a fraud alert from Citi on my in my email on my iPhone. I open it up. I hit the big green yes button on the email, as in, yes, I do recognize this charge. Get an all clear response back, tap my Citi card again, and then fill up the tank. Now, all this time, we get nothing from Chase. I open up the Chase app on my iPhone, nothing there either. Same thing in Paris when I needed an Uber fast, more on that in a bit. Chase declined, but my Amex Platinum card went right through. For me, it was just annoying because I always carry a full set of cards when traveling. I always carry a Visa and a MasterCard from different banks, and then an Amex, because single points of failure when traveling are bad. I don't want to be left hanging if one bank or one card processor drops their network or loses a data center. Oh, and also, I carry cash. But as we've talked before, that's just because I'm old school. Brittany was a touring vacation, so we were moving every couple of days or so, packing, unpacking, repacking. And during one of those repacking sessions, maybe it was in Morgat and the Crozon Peninsula, I couldn't find my Bose headphone case, which had my Bose headphones in it. I just couldn't find it in my backpack, and I didn't remember pulling it out. I mean, why would I? And where the hell did it go, therefore? I asked myself out loud, I think. So I pull everything out of the backpack, and oh, there they are. They had slipped behind my camera bag in the bottom of the backpack. So how did I lose my headphones in my backpack, you might ask, and rightfully so, because it really does, I mean, saying it out loud, it really does sound stupid. Probably it's the same reason I lost a Google tablet in that same backpack a few years back. Too much black. The Bose case is black. The interior of my Timbuktu backpack is black. And probably my eyes just aren't as good as they used to be. So I've been toying around about getting a new bag, more of a messenger style that I could sling over one shoulder and with a bit better waterproofing. And after this little panic drill, a non-black interior was a new requirement. And so I ended up actually getting a small Timbuktu classic messenger bag. I went with Timbuktu because I've had this my Timbuktu backpack for 7 years, and the thing is just, you know, just keeps going. It's like iron. So I figured, get the messenger bag. I ended up getting it from the outlet section of REI.com for like $50 because it was discontinued. It's not too big. It holds my 11-inch MacBook Air, a couple of notebooks, an umbrella, and it has a bright yellow interior. I haven't lost anything in it yet, but I don't know. I don't trust myself. Maybe I need to get like a white umbrella, and maybe I need to spray paint my Bose case red. I mean, I love black, as I've said before, but I don't know. Maybe I've taken that color palette a bit too far. Hey, and if you have any travel rants, questions, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can send in an audio comment, a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, make a comment on the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or you can always post your comments on the website at travelcommons.com. So the only topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Travel Interruptus, a Greek tragedy in three acts whereby the travel gods toy with our anti-hero, that being me, for fun and entertainment. Okay, maybe it's not quite that bad, not quite sort of Book of Job level torment, but I have to tell you, two out of the three trips I've taken in the past month have just spiraled into head-shaking, metaphysical, like, what the hell is going on here, questioning of my decisions to get out of bed that morning. So, Act 1. My Midway Vegas Nashville travel day. Now, this trip didn't start out to be that stupid. It started as an easy day trip to downtown Nashville for a sales call. I mean, so many people are abandoning Chicago for Nashville. Southwest now has nonstop flights every 90 minutes or so. So no problem with flight times. And, you know, that works out fine until someone books a sales call. Now, for that prior afternoon, in Las Vegas. Now, how do I get from Vegas after 4 p.m. Pacific to Nashville in time for a meeting the next morning, Central Time? Southwest actually is about the only choice. Connecting through either Denver or Houston, I'd go for the more direct routing through Denver, which is my first mistake. Because, as it turned out, the March bomb cyclone, what the Weather Channel helpfully named Winter Storm Ulmer. I mean, who or what is an Ulmer? The bomb cyclone was going to shut down DIA that day with 80-mile-an-hour winds. So I get an email from Southwest the night before, canceling my connection through Denver, which is understandable, but there's nothing else. No rebooking. It's just, we're leaving you in Vegas, which actually I found out tends to kind of be Southwest's MO. Pleasantly unhelpful. Especially when then their website kept erroring out when I tried to find an alternate routing to Nashville. And then the automated message answering their 800 number was estimating, I don't know, an 80-some minute hold time. After about 45 minutes between banging on the website, banging on our corporate Concor app, and tweeting at their customer service, somehow I managed to get rerouted through Houston, safely south of the bomb cyclone. The next morning, I show up at the gate at Midway to find my 8 a.m. flight to Vegas delayed by 2 hours. Mechanical on the plane meant that they had to bring in a new plane and crew from, I don't know, someplace else. Annoying, but not critical. I had left myself enough time. I'd get into Vegas at noon for a 2 p.m. meeting. Enough time. So I go, I get another coffee. I log into the Boingo hotspot, clear some emails. 9:40, we line up and board. And then wait. And then the captain keys the mic, pauses, which, by the way, is never a good sign, and then starts talking. Well, he was rushed over from his last flight. He didn't have time to do the walk around before we boarded. And then when they did, they noticed a problem with the front strut. Maintenance is looking at it now. They don't know if they can fix it, but they need everybody off the plane. So now we deplane for what is now my second maintenance delay of the morning. We idle around the gate area, 10:30, nothing. I start looking at my watch. I mean, if I don't get into Vegas by 1 p.m., there won't be enough time to get to my 2 p.m. meeting. And so I just shouldn't get on the plane. Then they start to reboard us. Well, what time are we going to get in? 12:20. Oh, okay, I'll board. So we all get back on. And for the most part, actually, we end up retaking the seats we had in spite of Southwest's open seating. I guess we're all just creatures of habit. I'm surprised no one mooed. We all get on, we wait, the mic keys. There's a slight moan rather than a moo from the cabin. We're waiting for the paperwork. You know, it's always paperwork. You'd think they'd have this thing figured out by now in the digital realm. So I'm looking at my watch. It's now past 11 a.m. Central and the door is still open. A four-hour flight means that we're now coming up against that 1 p.m. Pacific arrival time. Do I stay on the plane? I don't know. A couple minutes more and my decision is made for me. They close the doors. I lean back, fish out my Bose headsets out of my backpack, and hope for no headwinds. We land, we get to the gate at 1:02 p.m. Now, Vegas is always a maze. There's no straight walkways. They always want to vector you through a thicket of slot machines. I head to the cab rank, shorter walk than trying to find the Uber Lyft pickup space, and there's no waiting. And I get a guy with a heavy foot. I'm at the client 5 minutes before the meeting. That was a bit too close. Now, my return trip to the airport and then the flight down to Houston are uneventful. Not even any turbulence as we kind of skirt the bomb cyclone. We get into Hobby. I don't know, maybe even a bit early. I grab a beer, head over to the gate. They call boarding. Just half the A group, A1 through 30, because that's all there is on this late flight to Nashville. 30 people. The gate agent scans the boarding passes saying, okay, now you're in row 3, you're in row 4, you're in row 5. We all get in our separate rows, and then we wait. And then the captain keys the mic and pauses, and then says, this plane had a bird strike on the nose on landing. There's no damage, but maintenance has to pull the nose cone off for visual inspection. It'll take about an hour, so you're free to get off the plane. By now, everything in the airport is closed, so just get back on the plane. My third maintenance delay of the day. Unbelievable, I tweet out in frustration. Except that my iPhone auto-corrected a delay into DJ. And Hillary Bauman, a longtime Travel Commons podcast listener, pointed this out to me in a really nice emoji-laden tweet reply, and it gave me a good chuckle, and quite honestly, I needed it. I finally got into my Nashville hotel around 1:30 in the morning. I looked at the time, I just shook my head and went to bed. Act 2. A couple of weeks later, Sunday morning, Rennes, France. So Irene, Claire, and I wheeled our luggage the two blocks from our Airbnb to Rennes train station to catch the TGV to De Gaulle Airport. We stood with everyone else, looked up at the departure board or waiting for the track to be posted. Departure time came closer and still no track. This is not a good sign. The crowd grew larger. Then there was an announcement in French and a scrolling message at the bottom of the departure screen. Irene banged that message into Google Translate. The gist of it was a bomb threat had been phoned into SCNF, the French train company, and all the trains in and out of Paris were halted. Now, given France's recent history with terrorism, it was a reasonable response. But still, They finally started posting delay times, 40 minutes, then over an hour, but then it shrinks back. I pull up Google Maps. The drive to Charles de Gaulle is showing to be shown about the same time. It's going to take about the same time as the train ride, but we'd be in control of our own destiny. We would know when we were leaving. So I walk down to the rental car offices. It's Sunday morning. They're all closed. They won't open until the afternoon. Too late for us to drive and make our flights. Time continues to tick by. Past the departure time for our flight, Irene's and my flight, I call United. Any other options? I got a phenomenally helpful agent. She was really great. I could hear her banging away. I could hear the keystrokes. Nothing else today, she said, nor tomorrow, Monday. Now, I have to tell you, I was not surprised that there wasn't anything available today, but the next day, nothing being available until I got a text from our son, Andrew. He was supposed to be on this Sunday's United flight to Chicago, but it just canceled for a hydraulic problem. And then he got rebooked on the next day's flight, Monday's flight, which explains the lack of seats for us. So I took the Tuesday seats. Now, would we get to De Gaulle in time for Claire's EasyJet flight to Edinburgh so she could make class the next day? The trains finally start moving. We head down, board our train, and then we wait and wait some more. And then the train starts moving. I look at my watch. I think Claire's going to be okay. Until we come to a stop in the middle of a rail yard. I watch a couple of guys walk past our car. I don't know, maybe a visual inspection. After a bit, we start moving, but backwards. And the conductor keys the mic and makes an announcement in rapid French that we just can't pick up. And so I open up Google Maps. I see that we're off to the east of Paris, but I really can't tell if we're moving in the right direction because it still feels like we're moving in reverse. Until we pull into the next train station. It's for Euro Disney. I find our train route on the SCNF website and see that actually this is one of the stops en route to De Gaulle. It looks like we had skipped one before. So I think we're moving in the right direction. We get to De Gaulle by 3 p.m., which means that Claire can make her flight. Andrew comes over from the airport Hilton, where United is putting him up for the night. We head down to Paris for another dinner together. There are, after all, worse cities to have to spend an extra day or two. Act 3, Tuesday morning in Paris. Our first layover in Paris yesterday, Monday, had been a beautiful day, sunny and warm. We walked through the Marais, south across Île de la Cité. I know I'm butchering that. You can tell my French is non-existent. But go across, taking the obligatory selfie in front of Notre Dame that, honestly, we pulled out and looked at 2 weeks later during the news coverage of the fire. But then we walked across the Seine, rattled around the Latin Quarter looking for a place with outdoor seating and a nice rosé. This morning, Tuesday morning, though, not so beautiful. It was dumping down rain. So rather than trundle our luggage 10 minutes through the rain to a metro stop, I decide to order an Uber, which takes a try or two when Chase declines my visa again, and then I have to switch over to Amex. A nice black Mercedes picks us up, and we head for La Halle train station. Or at least we try to. The traffic is at a crawl, at best. I watch our buffer time tick away, and we're not getting any closer. After sitting through a couple of traffic light cycles without clearing the intersection, we just give up. We grab our bags and make for La Halle on foot. We get there a bit wet. We're able to skip the ticket booth line. I've got enough euros for the self-service machine because it's that, or a chip and pin card that we don't have. We get on the train. I look at my watch. We should have enough time to check our bags because we're bringing back some liquids, clear security, and get to the gate really without too much more agita. Until, that is, the train slows to a stop between stations. The conductor keys the mic and makes an announcement in rapid French. I look at the other passengers. They don't seem too agitated, so I don't know. I figure maybe it's just some congestion on the track ahead. And sure enough, we start moving after a couple of minutes. But at the next stop, the train doors stay open, and a train employee comes on saying in French and English, everyone's got to get off. Got to go downstairs, catch a bus outside the station to another station, then catch a different train to the airport. We get off, we head down, we hurry down the stairs to the bus stop outside. There's no one there from the train company to help. Just a couple hundred, you know, people milling around with luggage, looking at each other. So now I'm worried. We really have no time to figure this out. The taxi stand is mobbed. I fire up Uber, 19-minute wait for a car. Lyft, they don't work in Paris. So I Google to find a taxi company that I can call and order a cab. But before I call, I try Uber one more time. It's now a 5-minute wait for a 60-euro fare. I hit the order button and then hit it again after I swap from Visa over to Amex. 60 euro for a 15-minute ride to Charles de Gaulle is tough, but, you know, it's cheaper than another night in a hotel. So we end up getting there. The driver is a great guy, another black Mercedes, gets us there less than 15 minutes, probably 12. But at this point, every minute counts because we get to the United desk 2 minutes before luggage check closes for our flight. The agent radios down, he checks in our bags, and then he gave us the De Gaulle version of Fast Track so that we could sidestep the long passport control and security lines. We board, we sit down, but we really don't settle in until that plane leaves the ground and then gets up to 10,000 feet. And then we exhale. And actually, when we're finally at O'Hare, standing by the luggage carousel, our bags are the first ones to come out. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 150. I hope you all enjoyed the show, our comic tragedy in three acts, and hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can find us at SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn. You can ask Alexa to play Travel Commons, iTunes, and also Spotify. The links, along with the RSS feeds for those of you who are still spreading the propeller, are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. Right below that in the social media section are links to the Travel Commons Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. If you've already subscribed, though, how about leaving us a review on one of those sites? Or like Dan in Canada, who gave us a great Twitter shout-out. Dan wrote, "Great for everyone who travels for work. Fun stories, good anecdotes, and tips and tricks." Dan, thanks very much for that. I'm glad you enjoy the show. And hey, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text, audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter. Write them on the Travel Commons page on Facebook, in the comments, in the Instagram site, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And until we talk again, hoping that you don't go through travel interruptus, and hope everyone has great and safe trips coming up. Until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.